Welcome to You Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. Our hosts are young people in Mendocino County, California. We are in our 19th year of production. You can listen to dozens of our earlier shows easily at our website, www.youspeaksout.net, or get our podcast link.
Hello, my name is Eve Kryling. I am a junior at Laytonville High School, and I am the new student body president for Laytonville High School, and I'm here with our science teacher of Laytonville High School, Bruce Potter. I've taken his chemistry, biology, and physics class throughout my high school career.
And my name is Bruce Potter. I'm a teacher, science, woodworking teacher, and mock trial coach at the high school, and I've been teaching here for 33 years, going to retire this year, and I was also the coach for Eve on our mock trial team.
Mm-hmm. So start off with a fun question. Like, can you describe a highlight of your teaching career to me?
A highlight of my teaching
career. Just anyone, anything that comes
really
to mind?
It's hard to put one highlight together, but
out of 30 years, right?
Yeah, I don't know, just the kind of programs I've been able to develop. I mean, there's no one singular event that just pops up in my mind, but there's things that I've done that are just highlights that I've been able to kind of do. So I've been able to do things that I like to do just at home, you know, like setting up a biodynamic garden, and I've managed to do mushroom growing here at school, which was just sort of a passion of mine. I'm really proud of what we did with that. I was able to do guitar building once I got into that. Kids seemed to be interested, and I was able to set up a whole program with that. I feel like all the things that I love doing in life, I've sort of made my job around those, which has been really kind of exciting. So I don't know about a singular event, you know. There's been little moments where we've won competitions and things like that, and, you know, moments in class, the aha moments for kids when they finally get it and all that, but that, you know.
So what you're most proud of is, like, the way that you got the chances to create a variety of different learning situations in school by, like, introducing things that you're passionate about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've realized about that I have to have a project. I got to have a problem to solve in my life or else I'm not happy. It's like the minute I finish working on a problem and I've gotten all the problem solving done and I'm just doing it, then I sort of get bored and I'm ready to, and I pick something else and I get interested in that. Every time I've done that, it seems like I've been able to incorporate that into what I'm doing at school, you know, which is really good. So it's like when I'm really at my, you know, passionate high, that's when I'm doing it at school. And then, you know, and then I switch to something new. You're like, the latest thing was the aquaponics and the hydroponics here at school and all that stuff that I'd never done before, and I really got into it, and we were able to just put a few years of just kind of intensive going into that. And, you know, so it's been every 5 years or so I've sort of switched into different things. It's been pretty exciting.
What was your most difficult project that you did through Laytonville High School? Like, what was your most challenging project you did here?
Well, you probably don't mean a project in this way, but
getting kids to care.
That's the most challenging project that I'm always working on. That's the big problem solving challenge that it plagues me, you know, since day one, you know.
Just to care about school or to care
about
themselves?
Yeah, to want to put passion into things. And want to have the discipline and the drive to stay focused on something and just really do quality work and just, you know, have it consume them with, you know, their energy. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, you know, occasionally there's students where that happens, but it seems like, especially more recently, and it might just be that I'm just getting jaded with teaching, but it seems like the current classes have been, it's harder. There's less and less of those kind of kids that get, they don't really care. They just want to do the least possible work. Just tell me what I need to do. You know, they're not even worried. A lot of them aren't even worried about failing, you know. And so that's the real challenge. But in terms of the most challenging project that I've set up and tried to do, probably it was the mushroom growing stuff that we did, because it involves so many different things. There, we built a straw bale building just for a fruiting structure for it. which was years of construction and then getting it working with the timers and the misters and the time and getting the airflow right and all this kind of stuff. And then we built an incubation room, and then we've got my lab here in the high school where we do the sterile transfers, and it's a fussy, difficult thing to do. And so getting all of those pieces dialed in and getting it to where we could do it in a classroom situation was challenging, but
That was. Well, what I remember doing it in biology class as a freshman, it went pretty smoothly. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, when we did the oyster mushrooms.
But yeah, we've had some good years and bad years.
Yeah. Well, back onto the topic of like the motivation of us high school kids, do you think that just stems from the schoolwork, like them being at school and like the whole attitude that's here, or from the curriculum itself?
I think it's more cultural, because I think the curriculum's always been there. You know, I think the curriculum hasn't changed much, you know, and most of those other variables haven't really changed much in my experience. And I don't know, I mean, I this is a conversation I have with a lot of people. I don't know what exactly it is. I'm sure it's a combination of things. Part of it's, I think, it's the social media culture, the instant gratification. You know, it's hard to compete with a computer that can give you instant feedback every second that they'd rather be looking at. It's difficult to compete with, the whole YouTube movie culture where, you know, everyone gets this idea that things should just always be fun and crazy and party and all these kind of things. I think that's something that wasn't here 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I wish I knew exactly. My philosophy is it's something has made it so kids don't have the ability to focus for long periods of time. They don't have a discipline ethic. And what has caused that, and that's, I'm not positive, but I think that's the root of what, because if you don't get into something deeply enough and really get into it and be able to talk about it for hours, you don't get to the good stuff.
Yeah, I would completely agree. And what, from my experience, just like growing up in this generation, is like people tend not to want to learn about new things, learn how, like a whole bunch of facts about all of these different areas of subjects in our world, when they can just look up whatever they're wondering at a moment's notice and get all of that information there. Like there's no need to retain information. There's no need to know facts. There's no need to know how things work. Because if you're wondering at a certain point in time, you can always just look it up there at your fingertips.
Right.
And I think that's where a lack of motivation comes from doing your schoolwork.
Yeah, and that's why if the schoolwork is just based around just learning facts, it becomes kind of, you know, I think the kids aren't stupid and they realize, why are we spending all this time? I can look this up, or I can do this. And that's why getting more in depth into a subject and really drilling down it gets away from the facts and more into the process of learning and critical thinking and logic and being able to defend an argument and all these kind of things. I feel like in order to do that, to create a compelling argument about something, or to figure out what you believe, you know, everyone's trying to kind of get a sense from all this information. They're trying to synthesize all this information and figure out where are my values? What do I believe? That is not an easy thing to do. Yeah. To really do it, it takes so much. It's like writing a book or something. You can never be finished with it. You know what I mean? You're always going to go back and do a little something. There's always something more you could know that could change your view and stuff. And I just feel like that's the level of kind of diving into things that makes people get excited about things and they start caring more about what they're learning. Yeah. If it's all superficial and just little facts, it's easy to get tired of that, especially after 10 years of the same thing when you come to high school and all you've been doing is learning vocabulary and a list of facts. That's why, you know, projects are so much more important way to get kids involved.
Mm-hmm. Like for me, when I'm learning a subject, I need to have the context of what I'm learning. I can't just be told like this is how the way something is, or else it completely leaves my brain. You know, I need to know in what way can you imply that or apply that information. Like, why do we need to know that?
Yeah, the relevance.
And I think a lot of other students are also wondering that, like especially in math and science classes, you know, because we don't have much experience in applying whatever knowledge we do gain from those classes.
I think one of the rubs is when you're taking an introductory math, when you're just learning the basics and mm-hmm. the fundamentals of algebra and all the geometry, and the fundamentals of chemistry. You know, you're just mm-hmm. scratching. You're just learning the vocabulary. Just yeah. learning how to work with things. You're not really. It's hard to then use that information in any relevant way. You mm-hmm. first just got to learn. It's like a language. You first got to learn the vocabulary before you can start making sentences and talk, you know, yeah, philosophically in that language. So that's kind of the problem in high school mm-hmm. is that, you know, high school kids need to realize they do have to get a working vocabulary and a working set of basic concepts and facts before they can do anything with it, you know?
But where I think the confusion, like, as you were saying, it's like, for example, chemistry, it's like a new language, but in any language, all words are grounded in definition. Like, you would need to know what something means in order to even know how it's used. And so I think, like, an issue that comes with just learning all the basic facts is you learn all this, like, surface facts, but then you have no idea what they, like, are. You know, you know that this and this works in a specific way together, but you don't know why it does that or
right,
how,
right.
you know? Like, I feel like that's where a block in math and science comes for a lot of students, you know?
Right.
Because you memorize, like, all
you
this
just,
information,
you way,
but you
yeah.
don't know what's actually going on.
Yeah, and that's because, and part of that, I think, is because we don't take that much time. We have this unfortunate system where we have this body of knowledge we have to teach during the year, and so we're racing through it to get through all this information. You know, I mean, we got to get to, oh my God, you know, it's the quarter's over now, I mean, I still got to get this. And so we're just shoving facts right and left rather than stopping with a topic and working with it for a long period of time or with that and slowing down and doing something with that information before we move on so that they truly understand the underpinnings of what it is. Because most people have to, you know, work with something multiple times before they really start to understand what they're doing. I know, like, in math, when I was in school, I just memorized my way through math. I don't know what I was doing. I just came up with ways to do things, and it worked, and I went, and I did that. It wasn't until I got into college or much later in life, probably because my brain had developed or whatever, you know, and I wasn't ready for the math when I was getting it, that I started to really understand the number sense and what it all was, you know, what was happening. So I think part of what happens is the system is so rigid, like, that I think math is a perfect example where not everybody's in the same place in their minds with math, and I don't know why we think they would be, you know what I mean? And so we run them through as though, okay, you're in ninth grade, this is the stuff you're going to learn, okay, now you're in 10th grade, regardless of the fact that they may have only gotten 60% of the material in ninth grade. We're moving them on to 10th grade, now they only know 60% of the material, so now they're failing 10th grade, and then we move them on. And I mean, in a perfect system, I think you'd have it where the school was flexible enough that kids would just be going to whatever math level they were in, and some kids would be able to race through to the next level in a few months. Some kids might spend the whole year before they got to that next level. And so you'd have kids that eventually were off doing college classes by the time they're juniors. And you'd have other kids that were just trying to get through algebra. But that's just the way it is. And that's at least they're mastering the stuff before they're being pushed along.
Yeah. But sadly, realistically, that especially in our small school, like, it's not a possibility because, like, there's already only so many teachers and so many hours of the day that they can be spread out through other different levels of kids. And so that's where the difficulty of trying to individualize
right
every curriculum is.
Teacher, I mean, this is it's not practical, but every
yeah.
teacher would have to be able to teach some
yeah.
level of math,
mm-hmm.
and you'd have to have some period of the day where kids literally are able to move wherever they need to go.
Yeah.
And then it may be that after 3 weeks, suddenly this kid's moving out of your group and you're getting some new kid in your group. And it would just be this flexible thing that happened for an hour or two every year, every
mm-hmm.
day. But that requires that you have a staff that can teach all those different levels of math.
Yeah.
And that's part of their mm-hmm. their assignment. But that seems to be this recurring theme. And all the time I've taught, our biggest problem always at the end of the year when we're reviewing and in any way is math. You know, getting kids proficient in math
yeah.
and English, but math is always the problem. So clearly, we haven't solved that problem yet. We just keep doing similar things, and it doesn't work.
Me just learning all of this new math as I'm going through high school, I've realized that it's changed a lot. Like, math has actually changed. Like the way math is taught, the way you're supposed to solve down the equations, the formulas, they've changed from when I was in middle school to now. Like I'll look at my little sister stuff and I won't be able to help her. Like, and so I think that's also kind of an issue with kids not knowing or not being able to keep up in math and not be able to retain that information, is that everything is just kind of so mixed together and kind of so fluid, you know, that things can get changed without someone even noticing it, you know, because like I get confused on different types of formulas and different types of equations because they're so similar. I was basically taught to solve them the same, even though at higher levels you start to solve them differently, you know?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is that they've changed, in my lifetime, you know, every 10 years they were coming up with a new math program, or maybe it was less. You know, there was this math. Okay, that didn't work. Okay, now we're doing this. This is going to work, and that didn't work. Okay, we've got a new way now based on brain development. Now we're going to do this. Nope. Okay, now what we really need kids to be able to do is this, and it just changes and changes. And now it's like we're solving the symptom and not the cause. But there's something. I think the problem is that everybody learns numbers in a different way. There isn't a way. If we could just figure out the magic way to teach math, suddenly everybody would understand math. I just don't think it works that way. I think we're just wired differently. And so people need to hear it in different ways. And that's why different teachers sometimes can connect with kids better. Mm-hmm. And why I think you have to move at your own pace and so on, because we're not wired the same.
Everyone the same. I think that's a problem as well. Like they teach you the system of like getting your work done and being a good student, and you're expected to follow that system, but then you can often get stuck in it, you know, and have like when you move on to more challenging intellectual like problems, you want to follow your system, and sometimes that system will fail you, you know. Like that's how I get mixed up when doing like a formula numbers math problem when compared to doing like a word problem. Like I don't know how to connect the system I was taught to solve the numbers problem to the word problem, you know? And I think that's where gaps in learning can occur.
Right. And I think the other issue for math is that the foundations are so important. If you don't get your foundations right, if you don't master this, you really can't go to that. And if you don't master that, you can't. And I think in elementary school, I don't want to blame elementary school teachers, but I think they would agree, they're not confident with math, but they're teaching math. And so we get kids coming through that they're having people teaching them math that don't really understand math themselves. And that can cause some real damage, you know, and that really screws kids up. And it has long-lasting effects to where, you almost have to just say, okay, we're starting over from ground one. Okay, here's a number line. These are positive. These are negatives. Okay, now we're in here. This is when you add things, when you subtract, when you do a fraction, you know, just you have to just get somebody that really understands math to just start from the beginning, get them to master the simple things, and just reconnect the brain in the right way. Because there is a certain way to teach math, I think. But I think people do need to hear it in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's also the topic of not everyone is like a math person per se. Not everyone automatically connects with, I don't just want to say like schoolwork, but like paperwork and like formulas. And like some people are more talented in hands-on and, tactile learning. And I was wondering like how, like, do you see a large gap in like kids that are more involved with like in like athletics and woodworking and more art and more tactile learning compared to those who are more studious?
I think there are different people have different preferences, mm-hmm. you know, and there are people that, you know, don't think in terms of details. They think in terms of big picture, or they might be more artistic and they think in words, or they think in colors, and they think so I think there are those basic things, but in my experience, I mean, the kids that do the best in woodworking are the ones that are doing best in my chemistry class, you know. So what does that tell you? I mean, I never really bought into this. I'm a hands-on person, and I'm not, so I can't do anything else. Yeah. I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's about discipline and focus. It's like if you learn and you train yourself, you have a habit of your mind to be disciplined about what you do, and you can stay focused on something for a long time, and you look for you're willing to change things and get it right and not be lazy and just move on. If you have that discipline, you're good at a math problem, you're good at a chemistry problem, you're good at building anything in woodworking. It's the same thing. It translates to everything you do in life. You know, it's that, you know.
So it's more about a determination, less about talent, is what you're trying to say?
I think so. I mean, there's some brains that are better wired for certain things. I mean, mm-hmm. There are just smarter people in this world that, you know, people can just do things with their brains that I can't do, you know. And so you've got some people that are, everything's going to come easily to them, and they're going to do that. But they're the exception. But for the majority of people, the people that we consider are... that I would say are like academically not doing well, you know, your D students or people that are just struggling and failing and whatnot. I think it has more to do with not the fact that they organically have something wrong that makes it so they can't learn that material, but that they just, for some reason, are not, focusing themselves or disciplining themselves to hunker down and to do it, you know? That when you get kids one-on-one and you force them to focus and not be distracted and keep doing something over and over and over until they get it right and they see little bits of success, and little bits of success can have this huge effect of self-esteem and make them then suddenly start learning. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they continually do something and then they quit before they ever try and they don't get the success... then they go, oh, I can't do this, I'm a failure, and then that becomes their habit of the mind. That becomes the way they do everything in life. That's what I mean by these things translate to the way you do everything. If your ethic and your mode is, I stay with this thing until I get it, you know what I mean? And if I don't get it, then I go ask somebody and I figure out ways to make sure I can solve this, and I do it for hours. You know, the Thomas Edison kind of approach to how to do things, right? Thomas Edison apparently didn't have very, he wasn't like exceptional IQ or anything. He was like this normal dude that just wouldn't go to sleep at night, you know, because he'd be so, you know, he'd rig up things so he wouldn't fall asleep, you know, because he wanted to stay with these things. And he accomplished these amazing things, right? He wasn't a brilliant guy, you know? So I don't, I don't know if that's what you were getting at, but I don't think there's a difference between hands-on versus this. I just think that's, the people that prefer hands-on things, they can do things that don't require them to have to maybe focus as much, you know, in order to just accomplish it. And so that's where they've landed.
What are some of the ways over your years of teaching that you've, like, encouraged kids to stay, like, motivated and determined on their projects? Like, what are some of the ways that you help them achieve that ideal that you think that they should have to succeed?
Yeah, it's tough to get. I mean, some kids are easier than others, obviously, but I think I've always kind of gone by the three R's, which not reading, writing, and arithmetic, but rigor, relevance, and relationship. I think that's what teaching is all about. I think if you expect a certain level of rigor of them, then they respect you. They realize, whoa, this guy thinks I can do stuff. You know, I mean, you push them and you make them realize you can do more than you think you can. You can really do a lot more than you think you can. And having a relationship with kids, you know, just right from day one, making sure they know that you care about them and you're interested in them and you know, you're just a guy, you know, you're just one of the guys. You just want to, you know, help them. And then showing them the relevance. Why do we need to know this, you know? If you can put those three things together, and probably you have to have a relationship before you can do anything. So once you've established a relationship with a kid and they know that you're kind of, you know, they respect you, and so on for however you do that, and you challenge them and you make it relevant, then it seems like it all falls, then you get kids to stay with things. They want to, because they almost want to please you in a way. You know what I mean? They don't want to lose that relationship.
They want to gain your respect.
Yeah, they want to gain your respect, and they feel bad if they're afraid that you're not going to respect them.
Yeah,
you know, and so they're willing to stay attached. And I think that's huge, and I don't think we put enough emphasis on those three things. It makes a huge difference.
What made you, like, when you started teaching, what were your expectations towards it? Like, what made you want to pursue this career?
So when I was getting my master's at Humboldt State, I taught some of the graduate classes. You know, the graduate students do the labs and stuff. Like, we don't teach the whole lecture, but we do the we do the lab sections of those courses, and we do the field. We go out on field trips, and we do these with students. And I just really liked that. And I did, I did a bunch of that up at Humboldt State. I really liked teaching. To be honest, I really liked the idea of having summers off, because I love being in the Sierra and hiking and just having time to pursue my own interests and not be a workaholic in my job. And so, you know, and I also, when I was graduating at Davis, my senior year, I did I worked at these outdoor education camps for sixth grade students, where we take them out for a week and we take them on hikes and we do night hikes. And it's like this program where they'd come stay for a week. And I just really liked the teaching part of it. And so that was the draw.
Well, to start off with that, what is the integrated program?
Well, so it was a sort of a school within a school that we set up called Integrated Studies. And I've forgotten how it all came to be. It was back when we were doing what we call restructuring at the high school. We basically got kind of fed up with just the system and that, you know, everything just, we were teaching the same way we've been teaching for 50 years and, you know, nothing seems to change. And so we went through this process where we just sort of said, okay, and this involved the whole community. We actually had like town hall meetings and stuff and got all the stakeholders involved. And we started to just break it down and say, okay, let's say we were starting from zero. Let's start from scratch, tear it down. What do we want kids to be able to do, have completed and have when they graduate from high school? If you were the superintendent of the universe and you can do whatever you wanted, and let's just say we got all the money we want to, let's just start with, you know, the dream. How would you do that? You know, what would it look like? Would you have six periods a day? Would you teach chemistry, physics, biology, social studies, math? You know, would that be the day, or would you break it up and do it? And so we just started to play with ideas and create a school, and it kind of became contentious after a while, and I've forgotten how it played out, but we ended up with a core group of teachers at the high school that really wanted to pursue this and do this, and it became this kind of like a school within a school, because the whole school wasn't willing to go along with the crazy stuff that we were coming up with. And so we had a group of, maybe it was just four teachers at the most, that decided to do this. It was like a charter school at the school, you know. And it was really the origins of what they now call project-based learning. We were basically just doing big projects and integrating science into them and integrating English into it and integrating math and, you know, finding ways to teach those subjects through these big projects that we designed. And the day was flexible so that we might spend the whole morning just on the English, just writing, you know, on something we'd done earlier. Or we might spend the whole day out, you know, mapping vegetation across the street. Or we were able to be flexible with the schedule because it was our school. We could do whatever the heck we wanted.
Do you think the results of that were positive overall? Do you think it helped the students, like, get more of the concepts?
Yeah, it worked and it didn't work. You know, just like anything you're starting for the first time. There are parts of it that worked and were just brilliant. And there were parts of it that were really kind of lame because we didn't know what we were doing. And we really needed, with anything like that, when you're doing something totally different and new, it takes many years to iron out the problems. And we did it for, I've forgotten how many years we did it, but I think it needed more years to iron out all the problems. And we ran up against some backlash from the community and from, because we weren't teaching as many concepts as we would normally. And so in many ways, it looked like the kids weren't learning anything, you know. But I think what they were learning were these processes and these habits of the mind and some of these things that we call the ESLRs now, the expected school-wide learner outcomes, which are not the academic thing. There are things like being self-directed and being a critical thinker and being a community contributor and being a effective communicator. And, you know, those big holistic kinds of things we call them. They're not actual concepts, they're just these holistic things that I think every parent would agree that's really what you want your kids to be, is those things, you know, because like you say, all the information's sitting in your pocket, you know.
Like when you have that foundation, then you can think more, like learn those facts and then think beyond them, you know. I think this is the ultimate goal when you're learning something new. Like you want to be able to understand what you're absorbing, but you also want to be able to kind of I keep saying the word apply, but apply it to things, you know. You want to be able to think about it more abstract, I want to say, you know.
Yeah, and be able to be a lifelong learner.
Yeah. Do you think that's, like, being able to do that is more important to learn in high school than, you know, grammar and, like,
well, I don't know.
Mathematical functions, you know.
I think it's important, but like I said before, there's, like, certain fundamental things you need to have. I mean,
yeah.
You almost have to front load things with the basic information so that now you can do something. So you can't just ignore vocabulary. You can't ignore basic grammar and sentence structure if you want to be an effective communicator. You can't, you know, so no, there is you know, there's things you just got to learn, you know, and that's part of that discipline and focus and part of that relevance piece of if you know why you're doing it. So here's one of the things that projects do, and one of the ways that I think really works with teaching is that kind of idea of a need to know. If you start out with a problem, like, here's what you guys have to do. You know, you got to be able to do this. You got to build this thing, and it's got to do this and that and this and that, and then you got to present it to people. So now suddenly it's like, well, wait, I don't know how to do that. What do you mean I got to build this thing? Well, yeah, you're right. You don't know how to do that. What do you need to know? You know, it's like suddenly there's a need to know the information. It's like, okay, yeah, it involves this right here. Well, that's electricity. Okay, so let's talk about electricity. So now you got the kids just hanging on every word, right? Because they're going to have to do this. And so if you've set it up where the stuff that they need to be able to do is, you know, there's this huge desire for the knowledge that you're going to give them, then that front-loading stuff isn't boring anymore. Mm-hmm. It's relevant. Yeah. And suddenly they want to know about voltage, and they want to know about how to make this thing work, because not only is that's what they have to do, but they also have to present it to people. So they don't want to look like an idiot. You know, they want to, that's the motivator. So when you design things like that, you get kids right where you want them.
Okay. Yeah. I'd like to end with the question. Since you're leaving this year or slowly fading out from Laneville High School, what are your hopes for the future of Laneville High School specifically? What do you want to see in the upcoming years from the students and the faculty here?
I would like to see it go towards those sort of project-based kind of philosophy like I was talking about. And I'd love to see the projects that I've started continue, of course. I mean, it'd be kind of sad to watch them all disappear, but they probably will. I mean, that's what happens.
That's what I'm anxious about.
Teachers take their, you know, projects with them when they go or whatever. But, I mean, I would like to see those things continue, but I'd also like to see some of those projects so that kids would get excited about learning. So some of those kids that don't even think of themselves as academics that have always thought I'm not a good student and I'm not would get inspired and get excited about something and would suddenly start to learn things and see the relevance and see that they're not stupid. They just aren't engaged. They haven't been engaged. Something has not caught them. And if they could somehow do things that would, you know, inspire them like that.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, one of the problems I think is that we get, and I think this is one of the problems that happened with integrated studies is the standardized testing kind of became this thing where suddenly we're under a microscope and they're looking at us and everybody, you know, everybody gets very concerned about, you know, test scores and how we're going to perform. And it works counter to what we really want to do. And we shouldn't even be thinking about that. We should just be doing what we know is right and what is going to engage and inspire kids. And then everything else falls in place.
Yeah. I think there is a certain anxiety that comes around with standardized testing, because, like, you're expected to know all of this information by the time you take this test. Like, I've taken three of these tests this year. There is this, like, standard of what junior high school students should know by this time. And I feel that if you're interested in other things that can't be tested, such as, like, gardening, cooking, like, building, I think that you can probably get left behind in where you are supposed to be by your junior year. And so that could result in low test scores. And so,
Unfortunately they tie, they aren't doing this now. I don't think it used to be tied to funding. You know, they would actually, you know, your funding was tied to your price. So, you know, people were doing everything short of cheating, you know, just to get their scores up. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and it just became, you know, it's not education at that point. That's some political game or something. So, I would hope that we wouldn't fall into that trap
of
worrying too much about that. I mean, that, it's kind of like the math program. Those tests are going to change every 10 years anyway.
Yeah. You know,
right when you get this one down, they're going to realize, oh, that didn't really work, and they're going to redesign it, and everybody's going to be flailing around not knowing how to take this next test. So, you know, it's more about inspiring kids, getting kids to have passion, getting kids to care. You know, that's it right there. And that's that habit of the mind. If you get a kid to have a passion about something, it'll translate to other things they do. You know, if they don't have a passion about anything and they just are lazy about everything they do, then they're lazy about everything they do. They're lazy about their relationships. They're lazy about anything that they're tasked to do in life. And I think that's the real problem. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of that going around right now, I think.
Yeah. Thank you for coming. It's really awesome to know your opinion on these topics.
Right. Thanks.
Yeah? Okay.
You are listening to Youth Speaks Out. That was Eve interviewing Bruce Potter, retiring Laytonville High School teacher. Please visit our website, youthspeaksout.net, and listen to radio shows we have produced over the past 19 years. Next, we will hear an interview from 2006. Patty Martin, a Laytonville High School student at the time, interviewed Native American poet and activist John Trudell on thinking clearly in the 21st century. John passed on in 2015.
So, I'm Patty Martin, interviewing John Trudell.
Hello, Patty.
So, I have a couple of questions for you, and mainly about youth and how the messages you want to send to the youth.
Well, I hadn't thought in terms of anything as a message, right? But what I would say to young people is basically what I would say to anybody, because I think as human beings, we're all equally at risk in this world, just the same as we're all equally entitled to joy, so to speak. All right? But I think because the youth are younger yet and they've got a longer time to be here, right? I think that it would be very important that they understand the value of their intelligence, and that young people understand, you know, to use their intelligence as clearly and coherently as they can, to think before they act, to think about things, and that, you know, to think and recognize as much about the issue that they're dealing with as they possibly can, to see things for what they are, because too many times we've been programmed to emotionally react to situations. And we generally react our reactions are generally based upon our beliefs, on what we believe this or we believe that, so then something happens and we react with how we believe, by how we believe. And I think that's what's helped to create the mess that the world is in today, is because if you're reacting out of emotionalism and beliefs, then that means you can't have emotional reaction and clear and coherent thought at the same time. See, one is at the expense of the other. And I think for young people to understand the value of their intelligence, I don't know how coherent I'm being with this, but that is what I would say. Understand the value of your intelligence and your own worth.
So how can youth, or all of us, obtain clarity of mind after being programmed by this the system and living in this political world in general?
Well, I think one of the basic things to me about clarity of mind, it's got about common sense, what makes sense. See, if something doesn't make sense to you, then don't rationalize and hunt for ways to get it to make sense. If it doesn't make sense, right, it doesn't make sense. Now, there may be things in life that appear that doesn't really make a lot of sense, but if you really think about it, not through your emotions and your beliefs, but think about it, recognize, you know, just think as clearly as you can about things before you do them, right? But in the end, it's if a thing makes sense, it's worth pursuing. If it doesn't make sense, then don't go there. You may, you know what I mean, like, especially like in the political environment, it's not just political, political, economic, religious environment that we're in now, none of it makes sense, right? To me anyway, I'll speak for me, right? But none of it really makes any sense to me. So I try to think in ways that do make sense to me and not get lost in trying to make sense out of something that doesn't make sense, because it's a trap. Most of the citizens in this industrial reality are trying to make sense out of things that don't make sense. They're not going with what intuitively, instinctively, you know, a more coherent way to deal with things.
In order to be, like, making sense, or, like, just to acknowledge and try to determine what's going on in our lives, how should youth sort of face the growing threats, like the military is, like, sort of posing on us, or gangs or drugs or that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, being as you're young and you're starting into this, just to, it's the system itself. The military is a part of the system, all right? The economics are a part of the system. The politics are a part of the system. Whether, you know, and how that breaks down into gangs, drugs, or whatever. And see, there's something about the system itself that doesn't make any sense, all right? And at some point in our lives, we all have to deal with it, all right? And I think, so in a way, it's like, you know, so how to deal with it is, I think first we have to go internally within our own self, within ourselves. And, you know, and understand that you're a human being, and understand the value of being a human being, and understand the value of your, you know, your intelligence. Knowing how much power that we have. You're young. See, so this shouldn't really apply to you, but I got a feeling that it does. All right? Is how insecure and bad can you make yourself feel? How low can your self-esteem get? See, and at your age, this shouldn't even be an issue. But if it is an issue, then that means something's really, right? But anyway, however bad one can make oneself feel through their fears and their doubts and their insecurities, well, that's power. That's your power, right? But you've been programmed. We've been programmed to use our power like that and then sit around and believe that we don't have any power. You know, and it's something about straightening something like that. You know, understand your own value. We do have power. We've just been programmed, all right, to perceive ourselves negatively. And what I'm saying, there is no reason for us to perceive ourselves negatively. Whoever programmed that to us, they did it because they're incoherent, right, and they're not clear, and somebody programmed it into them, right? And then, so that's all they know, so they program it to us. And whatever happens to you in your life, it's an experience. Don't judge your life. Experience it. And in the course of that, if there are experiences you have that are not the most positive, right? Well then, if you don't judge it, but you look at it so that you can recognize what happened, you know, you'll learn from it. And you can maybe deflect it from happening again. Because see, most people, they judge their lives and their experiences, so they don't learn anything from it, and it just keeps happening over and over and over again. But at the very essence, the very heart of it, there's nothing wrong with any of you. No, you know, you didn't do anything, no matter what anybody says, you didn't do anything, all right, other than to be born into a chaotic, incoherent, perceptional reality. All right, that's all you did, was be born into it. You didn't bring any bad to it, and you haven't contributed any bad to it. But I think most young people, at a very early age, right, get something put into their heads that there's something wrong with them. And there's not anything wrong with you, right? Except we've been programmed to perceive reality in that we're bringing the negative, that there's something wrong with us. Now, you know, just look at yourself. And what I mean about and not judging things, our responsibility as human beings, and we have the ability to go with it because that's what our intelligence brings with us, right, is to recognize the reality of life, not to judge it. To recognize. And to recognize means then we use our mind and our intelligence to look at a thing as many ways as we possibly can. You know, look at it from every way that we can through our thinking process. See, and this will help us to find clear and coherent ways to deal. Because the practical reality is all the problems that are in this world that we're confronted with now, there are no solutions. The way that it stands now, there are no solutions. All right? Contradiction now. But there is one solution. And that solution is we can think our way through it, but we have to bring clarity and coherency See, we can change, we have to create the answers. See, we can create the solutions to what's going on, but depending on how clearly and coherently we think. The previous generation got all lost. See, in my generation, really, there's very little thinking going on in my generation. We're not a generation of thinkers, and we're not, you know? And I just mean that observationally. Our intentions were good, and our motives may have been good, and all that. So let's just say we had all good, good rationalizations and justifications for what we were doing. But we didn't think our way through it. We just behaved the way the generation before had programmed us to behave. You know, so we were against war and for the environment. We all the right stuff in a way we were trying to represent and find it. But we didn't get there because we didn't know to think with clarity and coherence. All right, because we had the same low self-esteem and we had the same chaos. So we had the same basic distrust of ourselves. You know, so we behaved by the way they programmed us to behave, the way the system, this is the way to do this. This, if you don't like it, do it this way, do it that way. So we fell into that. So we built our whole thing around how we emotionally believed rather than how we used our feelings to think clearly and coherently. You know, and not that we didn't have any accomplishments, but because we did have accomplishments, but in the end, the way the system works, the accomplishments we had, they were just putting something off. We accomplished putting something off because the system keeps grinding away at the same thing. So we may have delayed something, but we didn't bring any solution, all right? But maybe just through the reality of new generations coming, right? Well, then maybe a part of that putting off the solution, well, maybe what we did do is we brought this generation here, all right? And if we can communicate to them some understanding about creating reality with the power of their intelligence, see, then maybe this thing can still fall into place for us. But whatever the harshness of the environment is that we're in, whatever it is, everything is we've been programmed to perceive reality in a distorted way. You know, I think we should always think of ourselves as human beings first. We should always think of ourselves as human beings. You know, because that we need to know who we are. See, but because of the way everything has come down, we don't think like human beings. We think like by gender, male or female. We think by class. We think by race. We think by religion. We think by we identify, but we never think of ourselves as human beings. And we can't really connect to the reality of the power of our creative imagination and intelligence effectively if we don't know who we are. We're human beings. Yeah, and to me, it's little things like that, and just daily reminding ourselves of these things that help all the rest of us to synchronize. And I would say that every day, I would suggest that every day, you make a communication, prayer, whatever you want to call it, but I'm just saying make a communication with your creator. Number one, always thanking creator for life. All right? No matter what's going on, we should be able to thank the creator for life. All right? And as a part of that, we should thank the creator for giving us intelligence, because that's where we have our ability to create the solutions to the problems that exist. See, we've just been maladjusted in such a way that we use our creative energies, our creative abilities, and our creative powers, right? Basically, in a lot of ways, against ourselves. And then what we don't use against ourselves, we use trying to fit in to one of their definitions about how to deal with stuff. See, so we're not taking the time to really just think free, you know. I think everything should be questioned. I would say, and believe, I mean, just put this in your thought consciousness, like, see, that in a way, believe means I don't know, all right? So, how many times do you hear that as a part of people's conversation? I believe this, I believe that. See, I mean, and you know, why don't we say, I don't know this, I don't know that? Because when we're saying, I believe this, I believe that, then we're just tricking ourselves, right? So it's better to say, I think this, or I think that, rather than I believe it. Because if I'm gonna go into the paradigm of belief, then that means that I'm not thinking. See, my my ability to think is limited by what I believe, right? So that's like putting my thinking in a cage, in a box, right? So it kind of neutralizes the thinking process. If we conscientiously think or say, I think this, I think that, then we're activating our thinking process. If we go with, I believe this, I believe that, then we're not activating it. See, we're just, that means, well, I don't have to think about it because, right? Because that's what I believe. And I think everything should be questioned. That's how we should be questioned. That's how we learn. Whatever the problems are and whatever the state of the world is now, so to speak, right? I think that we can change it. I do think that. Because I do understand, in my own perception of reality, I understand the reality of power. Power isn't how we think. See, that's the reality of power. You know, guns and money and armies and like that, those are things that are access to authority, but they're not really power. See, whoever has the most guns or army, they're not, that doesn't make them powerful. What this does is this gives them access to authority. Whoever has the most money, see, that doesn't mean they're powerful. All right? They manipulated, lied, they did all the things that do not represent power in order to get to authority. You know, so we make these distinctions, create our own understanding of the difference between power and authority. See, then we start to get into reality of who we are and what we can do. We can outthink them. I know that we can. It's just a matter of whether we will or not. Is that it? Is that an answer? Okay.
One of the issues I know that is going on currently with, I mean, I think the whole youth generation is low self-esteem. And I see it in schools. I see it, you know, within myself. I see it with, you know, all that kind of stuff. And one of the things it causes it is it causes me to look up to people, to look to, like, my heroes or to leaders or look up to certain people, you know, that, like, seem to have more power or authority over me or something like that. Who should those leaders or heroes be for us, the youth, rather than, like, the supermodels or the magazines that we have right now?
Well, I think, for me personally, but at my age, because I don't know what to say for a younger people, right? Because from my attitude is like, I operate from the premise there are no heroes. There are people who do heroic things, all right? And I think maybe to remember that. Yeah, I mean, this is just from my perception. I'm not trying to, but to me, there are no heroes, but there are people who do heroic things, and some of them may do it repeatedly. Right, or just once it may come up in some way, right? Or some, right? Because to me, like, people that go and they struggle through extreme poverty or hard times, but yet they keep their family unit together. Well, they're doing a heroic thing. So in a way, that's a, you know. But these people don't have names that are famous and flashed out there. You know what I mean? So that's why I phrase it like that about people doing heroic things. So it's hard to say who to look to like that. But I'm going to come back to this other part. What makes sense makes sense. See? If it makes sense, or if they make sense, right, then consider what makes sense. Say someone out here and they're making a lot of sense, and you relate to that, don't make them a hero. This is somebody that makes sense. Let them remain a human being. Don't create any pedestals, all right? And listen to them, and if they don't make sense, then don't listen. Right? And people may make sense about some things and not make sense about other things. Well, then don't judge it. Just recognize that. Well, I can trust these people to make sense about this, but I can't trust them to make sense about that. Rather than looking externally, look internal about, I want to do the best that I can do. What's the best that I can do? See, and then you're doing that heroic thing. See, you become that. Right? Because, and that's what I would say is, and whoever it is externally that, let's say, you would admire, right, or put it in that kind of way because of who they are, what they represent and things, well, then follow as much of that path as you can, right? Because we have to live it, you know. And this whole thing about the supermodels and all this and that, you know, I know it's a difficult thing to get people that aren't young people to understand, you know. You know, because everybody's got this stuff in them that where they're looking externally for something, right? And we can't, not going to make that go away. But what I do find is rather than try to convince people of anything, all right, rather than try to convince people to go your way, you go your way, all right? And you bring as much coherency and common sense, what makes sense, you bring as much as you can, because this will attract like energy. It'll help you find like energy. See, so look for the energy that's compatible to yours. And if there are these energy systems out there that aren't, don't let them engage your energy. Don't try to convert them. You make the sense that you make. You express your realities and your clarities to the best of your ability. Right? And if somebody doesn't get it, don't try to argue them into it. Right? Because in the end, you can't trust them. If you've got to argue somebody into doing something or talk them into doing something with promises and sweet smiles and things, right? That doesn't mean you can trust them if things ever really get hard, because then they're going to say, well, they talked me into it, or they smiled me into it, right? Or whatever, right? And then they'll look at it as a, so, am I making sense? Yeah, right? Be real to yourself. Always be real to yourself. Whatever you do, don't lie to yourself about what you're doing. And there are many ways we can lie. We can do it through self-justification, self-rationalization. Many ways we can bring our denials. But whatever it is that we do in our lives, we should always be real to ourselves. Even if we got to lie to somebody else about what we're doing, right? Always be real to ourselves, because this will help us to find that balance. Because then when we're being real to ourselves, all right, then that means we're showing respect to that Creator that we're thanking for life. Right? It's a way of showing respect. How can we respect our Creator if we can't be real to ourselves? You know, and if there are things in there that we're not comfortable with, right? Accept that that's a part of who we are. You know, accept all our parts and participate in this reality as a whole. And if there are parts in us that we're not real comfortable with, right? But if we're real to ourselves and we can't live with these parts, they'll evolve out of our thought behavior pattern. If they're there, they're uncomfortable, but we can live with it, then live with it, right? And just be whole. Be whole as a human being. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's the answer you got. Okay, well, I'm glad I did this, right?
That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Leighanville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project is proud to support this month's Youth Speaks Out. Our Environmental Prevention Strategies in the Community, also known as EPIC, is a project funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Through our organization and coalition, we are working towards reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Leighanville community. If you are interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Leighanville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email jayma@leighanville.org, jayma at layton@leighanville.org.
Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this radio station. They're the views of those who express them. Youth Speaks Out is free to rebroadcast upon notification. Our shows are posted monthly at our website, youthspeaksout.net. You can find our podcast link there or on iTunes. Thanks for listening.